Coming up on Smart Tech Today, Matthew and I start out with a little warning. If you got Echo Buds, you're going to want to get the firmware updated before we talk about some changes in the space, including walkie-talkies for those suffering from COVID-19 and voice-to-text from Google. Plus, we cover some of Matthew's new personal automations. We cover our picks of the week and so much more. Stay tuned for this episode of Smart Tech Today. Smart Tech Today is brought to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? Well, LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit lastpass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/STT. Welcome to Smart Tech Today, where we explain the exciting, the dynamic, and the, well, sometimes confusing subject that is the Internet of Things. I am one of your hosts, Micah Sargent.
And I am your other host, Matthew Casnelli.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Micah. How you doing?
I am hanging in there. To be honest with you, I can't hear out of my left ear very well right now. My sinuses are just all sort of... what is the word? They are striving to melt my brain. And so sort of behind my eye is just all this pressure and I can't hear very well out of this ear. But aside from that, I'm doing pretty well.
Well, I hope you feel better soon.
Me too. Yeah. I've been researching nasal irrigators. So it's been an interesting couple of days. Yeah. Mm. Those are two words that should be together. That's for sure. The last time this happened to me. And when you don't, you got to know when to fold them. That's what they say. Anyway, let's start with something that everybody should know. I got an email about this because I happen to be one of the, what I imagine are somewhat few people, maybe not, I don't know, but I happen to be one of the people who owns Echo Buds. That is Amazon's take on truly wireless in-ear buds, in-ear phones. And it turns out that they are a bit of a safety risk.
Yeah.
So what happens? Why are they a safety risk?
I think it's one of those things where Amazon's being proactive rather than reactive. It's like a small number of products are overheating. So they basically are just telling everybody, no matter what, we're going to do a new firmware update, something related to the charging. But basically, just as soon as you pair it up and as long as everything is charged up, it should update itself and then you should be good to go. But it's kind of like if they were overcharging in the case. And I know sometimes, especially since they're not always my primary, I have one too, by the way, they're not always my primary pair. I can like leave them charging. So
exactly. I saw this
and one of my friends, Aldous, also has a pair, and he says they're like his favorite headphones. So
nice.
I was like, please update yours because I don't want this to happen to you.
No fire or uncomfortably hot to the touch. So it's not any more we know than just overheating takes place. But whatever that might mean, obviously it is best to update those. This Verge article says that as long as you have firmware, and I quote, 3.18.119.151 or above, you should be in the clear. So if you don't currently have that version, you're going to want to open your Alexa app, head to devices, choose Echo and Alexa. Oh, shoot. I just said the word. Oh, no. I haven't said that in forever. I'm so sorry.
Vindication.
Then Echo and Alexa, then Echo Buds, and finally pick About. That should update your Echo Buds to the latest firmware update, and then you should be good to go. If you don't have that update yet, you can sort of trigger the update. And if you check out that article that we'll link in the show notes, then it tells you exactly how to go through the process of making that happen. I'm going to have to pull mine out of whatever drawer I've stuck them in, plug them in for the first time in a long time, and do this very thing, I guess.
They're not hurting anybody. Get a lot out of them.
Yeah, they're not hurting anybody, given that they're just sitting in a drawer. Maybe I should give them to someone who can actually use them, like a family member or something. Anyway, I'll make sure that the update is applied first before I do that. So tell me, when do you use these? You said these are like your secondary pair?
I don't use them super often because I do use the AirPods Pro most of the time. But I've used them, I think, before when I got my earbud replaced on the AirPods.
Oh.
And then sometimes when I'm doing chores and things like that, just because I want to like mix it up and experiment with the stuff more. But I don't use them most of the time. I had trouble where they would fall out if I like turned my head or was like picking something up. But they sound pretty good. I don't like the noise cancellation as much because it kind of like pipes noise in to cancel stuff out, as opposed to AirPods kind of sound like there's nothing. Even though that's not as true as it was when you first got them, it totally doesn't seem as quiet now. But
Bose's flavor of noise cancellation definitely has that sort of undertow of hiss that it's you can hear, because you know noise cancellation in theory, as it currently stands, all works the same, where it's sending out an opposite wave to cancel out the signal. But some of them do a good job of sending out that, you know, opposite wave where you can't hear it. And then some of them, including my Quiet Comfort in-ear buds from Bose and these these Echo Buds, both have that issue where you can kind of hear it. So I think it's a Bose thing. The sound cancellation works. It's more noticeable whenever it's turned on. And I think that's always been the case. And I guess it's something that I didn't notice until I used a different kind, the AirPods Pro, in which case the noise cancellation was not something that I could actively hear.
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about pairing these to... And in general, I wish I had a pair of headphones that paired well with the Nest Hub that I have, because I always want to wear headphones when I'm listening, but I don't want to switch my AirPods because it's just not like it's so much slower than the normal AirPods.
I assume
the Google ones probably work better, but I don't exactly want to get a second pair of expensive headphones that I'm not really going to use that much.
So. I heard really good things about the Pixel Buds.
Yeah, my other friend likes those. So I've got two friends that actually use these products. So it turns out, Micah, there are people that don't have iPhones.
Wow.
Just a friendly ribbon.
I didn't know that. I'm surprised. I'm shocked.
He News says, for you on Smart Tech Today.
Picks up his Pixel. Mm-hmm. Oh no, don't look at that. You can't see my beautiful Pixel notifications. Check out this background. Well, you can't really.
You're not even showing me. So, especially if you're listening, you can't hear. Oh, okay, there you go.
There's a unicorn with its legs in the air and a very long tail.
Post a link to that, or is that a built-in one?
It's a built-in one that you can get, but I don't remember how to get to it.
Fair enough.
I bet I could ask Google to tell me, how do I change my wallpaper? I feel like a person who doesn't understand technology sometimes when I'm using certain aspects of Android. And it just reminds me, I need to be on this platform a little bit more often so that I can... It's the navigation stuff that gets in the way. So, All right. Let's talk about I like the way that you've categorized this section. Positive changes that are taking place. So Apple announced its developer site said, hey, here's the deal. We're going to leave behind. We're going to stop using. We're going to get rid of some racist coding terms. And I think we've seen this kind of across the tech landscape as one means of attempting to make the tech environment more welcoming is by making a change to language. And so in this case, it's, you know, leaving terms like master and slave behind for other ones, blacklist versus whitelist, things like that. So there are two things that I think are important here. One is that language, you know, people who are in ways sort of have the hair on the back of their neck bristle by these changes, I think underestimate the power of language. And there's a theory, and the interesting thing is that there's a lot to this theory that is just patently kind of silly and out there, and there's some of it that really is a reasonable suggestion. And that theory is that language shapes our consciousness, and our ability to communicate and the words that we can use to communicate with one another obviously have an impact on the way that our brains think, because we go from a place, you know, as a very small child, we go from a place where we don't have something to communicate with words what's going on in our brains, to then learning that we have these words to communicate what's going on in our brains. But then you start to think, what if there are things happening in your mind, and there are, that your set of words aren't able to describe? And so when you think of it like that, language does shape consciousness, because you can only communicate to others as much as you're able to based on the words that you and these other people have chosen to use to have these communications and these connections with one another. So that's important whenever it comes to making a change to language. Mm-hmm. But there's something else that I think is important to note, and it's something that I do see people talk about, and I think that people are becoming more aware of, and it's where we are putting the resources and the time and the focus, and how that makes a difference in the end. And I think of it like this. You know, you're walking along and you bump into someone and they fall down to the ground, and you watch them stand up, and then you hand them a nickel. And then the fact that they, you know, bumped their elbow, they're just supposed to sort of like let that go, even though you knocked them over onto the ground because you gave them a nickel. And that is the thing that I think is important to note here, is that while this is a good thing, and I think it is a thing that needs to happen, these tiny gestures do not excuse or stand in place of bigger, more systemic changes that need to take place. And so my hope and my, you know, desire is that we do say this is a good thing, yes, but this and changing the icons of different brands and companies hashtagging Black Lives Matter for a month and then going back to their ways is giving a nickel to someone you pushed down. It's a poor metaphor because there's a lot more to it than that, but yeah, that's just something that I think we should celebrate these things, absolutely, but it can't stop at just changing a couple terms, and there's a lot more work to do.
Agreed. It is like at a certain point, the least you could do, which is why it's good that they're doing it. But I'm even appreciative that the post that they did is essentially just an update on the developer thing, saying this is now different. They don't even go into too much detail. And it's just like, we're doing this, not like, here's a press release that Apple is now changing their stuff. I mean, of course, everything that they do gets covered. So, of course, people are going to celebrate it more. But it's like, again, I think one of those things that's just very simple. And for pretty much most people getting into tech anyways, when you first hear of these terms used in that context, you're like, why? What? Like, why did they choose that?
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like been part of the terminology from the beginning. So just seeing companies not accepting that it's just because the way it is sort of thing. It's like, no, let's do the right thing instead, not just hold on to some weird old tradition for no reason. So that is good. But again, like you said, real progress makes more of a difference.
This next one, this is a really important story. So someone very close to me, earlier this, I think it was this month, it may have been the end of last month, recently lost a loved one to COVID-19. And being there for that person while they were going through this, I saw how people have to handle the situation of being able to be with the person who is dying from COVID-19 and what that involved. And in this situation, of course, you are not able to be physically with that person because even the doctors have on full hazmat suits and, you know, are in the room in full hazmat gear. And they were given the opportunity via FaceTime to communicate with their loved one. But up to that point, you know, there was only text conversations when the person had enough energy to do so. And, you know, there's no handholding, there's no physical communication, there's none of that. And to be on the other side of a window looking in and, you know, trying to have this conversation and knowing that it's the last one was obviously very difficult for them. And there is a lot that needs to be done in terms of giving people the opportunity, even for people who, you know, haven't gone this far. I was reading a Twitter thread about a person who had COVID-19 but was recovering from it. And the person talked about the mental struggle that they went through a lot of the time, where they even started to hallucinate. You know, they're spending so much time alone, hooked up to these machines and recovering and in so much pain and unable to breathe and all of these things that they had to go through. And without being able to communicate with anyone because no one can be near you is obviously an incredibly difficult thing on both people, on both sides, you know, for the people in the hospital and for the people who love them, who, you know, they're the loved ones. So this story about walkie-talkies, a very specific kind of walkie-talkie being used to help families communicate, I think is great. You want to talk about what this device is?
Yes, it's from a company called Relay, and it's a children's walkie-talkie, actually. It's kind of interesting. This article from Fast Company goes through the story of how they wanted to find a way for people to just have simple conversation without necessarily needing someone to help establish a video chat. Like if you are in recovery and or in intensive care and things like that, you probably need some sort of assistance. So setting up a video chat and even just holding a phone up in the right way the whole time or something like that doesn't always work. And so this is basically a speaker that connects to an app, and you can press the button in the center and then talk to the person on the other side. And very simple. It isn't fully ready for hospital use yet because they were talking about needing some sort of material change to it so it stays clean and stuff like that. But I thought it was a very fascinating thing just to be able to have conversations long distance, like not a, it's not a real walkie-talkie. Like it's connected to the app, but
yeah, it still so sounds. With Relay, I've seen these being advertised by actually some of the people who were cast members of The Office. So both Jenna Fischer and Angela Kinsey both had advertised these devices, and they're essentially a cell phone device, but without all of the cell phone stuff. So it can connect via cellular and will let you communicate. And what they've done in this instance, this is a very specific way of taking this technology and adapting it because the doctors, they convinced Relay to essentially donate the service to the patients in this hospital. So you would pay a monthly fee like you would with one of those devices that you can put on your dog to track them over a cellular network. It's kind of like that. You pay a less monthly fee because it's just for one specific thing. And so they were able to get them to waive the fees, essentially donating the service to their patients, which is super cool. These are, I've seen lots of parents talk about using these with their kids because they're kids who, you know, want to have a cell phone, or parents who want to be able to communicate with their kids, but don't want to give them, you know, the full device with downloading apps and all the other stuff. And so this Relay device can do that without also letting their kid involve all of the other stuff. So I think this is super, super cool as an idea. And the fact that they're thinking about how to make the material itself better for school or for hospitals is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear too, in the article, they waived the cellular fees for the patients. Like it is a test. So they're not charging them for that, which is good as well.
Yep.
But yeah, very cool story.
Let's see. Up next, we've got Google's voice to text app, but for masks. What's going on here?
Yeah, this is another good story. I saw this come through on Twitter that it's basically this guy just explains how to communicate with patients who are lip reading or just people in general who need it. Not only people who need a lip read, but while you're wearing a mask. And it's the Google Live Transcribe app. And basically, as you're talking, you can hold up the app and it will just transcribe what you're saying in real time, normally so that people can either lip read or do the translations type stuff. But it's just a helpful thing if you generally rely on reading someone's lips and are struggling to see what they're saying. So it's a pretty powerful video, even just because on Twitter, everything's muted by default. And so I was scrolling past and could see what the guy was saying because he was holding up the phone while he was wearing a mask. So just another simple thing that might be a little bit more convenient if people are having trouble hearing or something like that, just when everyone is wearing masks, because it does add a little layer there.
Yeah,
and for people cool. who have lip reading needs, like hard of hearing issues.
That's good. Yeah. A good thought, especially just to keep in mind. Then let's actually skip that one because that's my pick of the week.
Sure.
So let's see. Sorry, I'm getting lost here. Oh, here we go. Apparently, it's not a good idea to close your MacBook if you put a cover over your webcam. This seems obvious to me.
Yeah.
I saw this kind of going around that, you know, if you've got a privacy shutter on your iPhone, or I mean on your MacBook Pro on the FaceTime camera, some people I guess have been closing it, and then of course, well, I shouldn't say of course, I guess. Then when you close it down, it's going to press up on that cover, which will then potentially crack the screen and or damage the webcam. So people are kind of being warned, hey, if that's happening, this is what you need to do.
Yeah. So I mostly just put this in because I am using my girlfriend's laptop. So it was her choice to put it on, which is, I'm not like upset. I don't know. It's not the worst idea in the world, even though the article does talk about how the camera is engineered so that it will show the green light when it's on. But even still, As somebody who live streams and has a webcam in front of him, and also occasionally, this is dreadful, but my overhead camera has like constant power. It's my DSLR. And sometimes I'll stop streaming and leave the camera on and then come back 2 days later and my camera is still on, which is not good at all. It's designed at least to run constantly. It's not like I'm, but still it's not, not literally constantly. So I don't know, just in general of making sure your cameras are off and things like that, that's a nice efficient way to guarantee that it's closed. But then I just didn't think about this. So I'm worried that now our laptop is damaged, but good to know too. Sometimes smart tech is just stuff that makes you feel better, even if it's maybe not technically necessary. And many companies will be happy to sell you those things. But if it makes you feel better, go for it.
Yeah.
Unless it ruins your laptop, in which case, don't do it.
Exactly. So this story is fascinating to me. There's a company called Reincubate, and this company is a makes it possible for you to access data from phones and from apps and from app platforms. So for example, they make an app called the iPhone Backup Extractor, which lets you recover calendar events, contact, basically everything that you can get from your iTunes backup or your iCloud backup. And there's even, you know, pulling from WhatsApp, from apps like that. And then some of the other tools that make it possible to get those bits and pieces from online. Then there's another tool that lets you look up what your actual iPhone is based on the serial number. Then so there's just a lot of different sort of data and data gathering tools. And now Reincubate has created an app called Camo, available to purchase for $40, that lets you use your iPhone or your iPad as a webcam on your computer. So you can plug it in and you can use your iPhone or your iPad with Zoom, with Meet, and more. It will, you know, show you, there are a bunch of different settings that you have. So, you know, the source, what lens on the iPhone you want to use, the resolution that you want it to be exported as, if there's flash being done, if you want to add a watermark or mirror the video, zoom in, rotate, there's autofocus tools, there's white balance tools. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different tools. But the thing that kind of weirds me out here is that it's from a company that's kind of meant to gobble up data and find new ways to get data.
Yeah, though. I mean, I think it's about extracting the data from your app, at least that part. I mean, I guess the way I saw it was just that they know how to get this information from just in general being tapped into that type of feed coming out of the iPhone. And so they realized, oh, we can get the camera feed and turn it into a consumer app. I get what you mean, though. Their own website is a little bit different than the Camo website.
Yeah, one good thing is that the company is based in London, and they are fully GDPR compliant. And then also, it looks like their privacy policy is quite clear about how it is not, you know, gathering and storing data on their stuff. They're saying that, you know, your data is yours. So I might have to try this app. You download an app for your iPhone and you download the app for your Mac, and then you use both together to make it available. Now, there are some other apps out there that can do this. There's, let's see, at least two. One second here. There is an app called NDI, NDI HX Camera, which lets you basically. It's Nutek's actual camera for putting NDI into your computer. So you have to download the NDI plugins and things like that. And then Epoc Cam, that's EPOC Cam, which both offer similar functionality at other prices. So NDI HX camera is available for $20. I believe that Epoc Cam is less than that, $10 or something like that. Yeah, that's for the iPhone. I think the Mac part is the part that costs, if I remember correctly. But yeah, these different apps will let you control or will let you access your camera. But I'm curious if, because this is interesting, this does seem to offer more control than all of the other apps did. The fact that you can choose what lens you are adjusting or that you're showing the camera through, that you can see the current percentage of your battery, that you can adjust the flash so that it can actually just be on at any time. That's pretty interesting.
Please don't do that. I don't want you, even though you could, don't. That's,
oh yeah, don't.
Your flash is not flash good lighting. On. I guess if you, you can do the level of it, so that might work.
Yeah,
maybe this is the only time you should, if you absolutely have to, and you have the option. I think, yeah, I think a big thing for them is the features. It's not just a feed of, like, even NDI's thing works wirelessly, and there is a little delay. So that was, for some reason, my first impression was that this was wireless, but it is needs to be plugged in. I hope they add that. But you can also do things like presets. So a big thing, I think a big, this is kind of, if you're going to make video or you want to be a level more professional, I think, because if you balk at the price, it's like you probably don't need it then, I guess, because as somebody who does live streams, I've paid a lot more for software that actually would do this. And just being able to have that level of control, I think, is important too, because especially iPhone cameras kind of go wild sometimes, and you can mirror it, rotate it, zoom it in as necessary, and I do that pretty regularly, so I think I'll be using this. It's one of those things also, though, that testing stuff live is not fun ever. It's really hard to change your workflow once you get it going, because you just don't want to immediately have it break down. So I was thinking about using it for this entire episode and then being like, guess what, I'm actually using Reincubate, but I decided not to, not give our producers a heart attack.
cool. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back with the rest of the news. Sure. In case you're wondering, this episode of Smart Tech Today is brought to you by Mint Mobile. That's right. It's the Fox, the cool green Fox, minty fresh. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're paying for? Between those expensive retail stores, those inflated prices, and the hidden fees, you're honestly being taken advantage of because they know you'll pay. Enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations and overhead. Then they go ahead and pass those savings on to you. Look, right now, you are probably paying for all these different fees and all these different services and things like that with your big wireless carrier, and you don't have to be. You can be paying so much less by going with Mint Mobile. I have talked before about how I slipped my Mint Mobile card. Now it's in this Pixel device that I have, and there are times when I've got full bars of connection on my Pixel and my iPhone itself is, which is on one of the big carriers, is not connected. And it's amazing that I can have that connection for so much less money. It's ridiculous. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month. Look at your wireless bill right now and then look at what I'm telling you $15 a month versus whatever you're paying right now. Why are you not switching already? Go switch. $15 a month. It's awesome with Mint Mobile's 3-month introductory plan. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. And with Mint Mobile, you can stop paying for unlimited data you're not even going to use. Instead, you choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigabytes of 4G LTE data. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and keep your same phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch that old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with Mint Mobile's 3-month introductory plan and get the plan shipped to your door for free, you head to mintmobile.com/STT. That's mintmobile.com/STT. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month with the 3-month introductory plan at mintmobile.com/STT. Our thanks to Mint Mobile for sponsoring this week's episode of Smart Tech Today. Yeah, did you like the little delay there? That was kind of fun. Huh? Kept you guessing. All right, let's move on. So, you know, instead of buying LED strips, you could build your own. Complicated, but apparently, it is not incredibly expensive to make the choice to build your own LED light strip. So this is quite the project. But if you're looking for a custom design or a custom look, this is one way to add that custom design or custom look to your setup using the custom LED light strips. I personally don't have it in me to build custom LED light strips, but and you can really, like, there are plenty out there that are pretty great. But if you want to kind of go and make your own version, this is pretty cool that there is a guide that you found, Matthew, that will show you how to set up your own custom LEDs and have them just how you want them.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to do this?
I am looking into it because it is very interesting. And I'm just, I don't realize I've never said the author's last name out loud, but Matt Howie, I think. That's just a piece called Building DIY LED Strips for Fun. And he goes through all of the different steps because it is, as a YouTuber, I am legally required to have LED strips changing in the background at all. No, I'm just kidding. But it would be nice to be able to add some accent colors. I think I would probably opt for, I don't know. I mean, they're controllable and everything. Like, that's the whole thing, is he goes through all the details of buying the controller and setting it all up. And it's very fancy. There's an app and everything. I don't know if it's shortcuts capable, but maybe I'll have to solve that part. But yeah, it seems pretty sweet. Like, he's like, I've got my tie-dye t-shirt and my multicolor LED strips in the background for all of my Zoom calls. I believe he works at Slack, so just having fun with it, I guess. But this is a pretty cool project. I didn't know it was this easy, and it's less than $100. So I think one of my LED strips costs that much. Oh, he does say he's working on a shortcut, actually. So maybe I'll have to hit him up and help him out or something.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Matt's, that would be kind of nice, though, to add that part to it.
He does a lot of smart home projects and things like that, like some NFC tags and things like that I've seen in the past. So always fun to see other just enthusiasts doing this kind of stuff, because I think that's always, companies will sell you $500 worth of this gear and you could buy it and put it together yourself, especially.
Right.
I think he was joking on Twitter, now that he has such a good setup. He's like, all right, guys, remember to like and subscribe. And I was saying, you're joking, but I would follow your YouTube channel because this stuff is actually really useful and make some of that affiliate money with these. Probably, I'm probably going to buy them. So
I've actually set up one with a blood pressure monitor. So I had a medicine that I took every day that would up my blood pressure. And I ended up not I ended up switching medicines, so I don't have that anymore. But I, because of my whole not being able to hear out of one side, I've had to take pseudoephedrine, which of course raises your blood pressure. And so I still do like to keep an eye on it while I'm taking that medicine. And so I pulled out my blood pressure cuff and monitor today, or reader. I don't even know what you call this, blood pressure meter. Anyway, blood pressure monitor, that is what it's called. And I thought, you know what? I always put my blood pressure into the health app for iOS. And so why don't I just stick an NFC tag on it? It's kind of hard to see because it's very bright, but there's an NFC tag on this. So now when I get my blood pressure, I can tap my phone to it and then it pops up and it says, what's the systolic, what's the diastolic? And I can to put those in and it enters it into the health app. So can't do it with toothbrushing. Get on it, Apple. But I can at least do it with blood pressure.
Did you ever file your feedback?
Yes.
I had scared crickets, actually.
Were their fingers crossed when I said that? Perhaps.
Well, there's a new bit out tomorrow, so hopefully, if it's there, if it's not there, we can submit a new round of feedback, because I will be doing that myself, as we'll get to soon.
So tell me now about your project this week.
Yes. This was sort of a project born out of necessity because of beta stuff, because I'm smart and nothing went wrong and it was fine. Problem solved, story over. Actually, just kidding. I rearranged probably, it's all tied together, but it was a waterfall effect of, I was rearranging all of the folders in shortcuts, the 100 folders that I have. And I'm pretty sure at some point rearranging 50 of those folders with probably hundreds and hundreds of shortcuts in them created some sort of database corruption error on my iPhone, which happens sometimes and is a horrible, horrible dialogue to get, because it's not totally clear that it's like, you'll be fine as long as they are synced, but it kind of says it like three sentences in, where it's like, all your shortcuts will be deleted. If you do have iCloud backup, by the way, they'll come back, but it's still, it looks like it says, sure, just delete all my shortcuts. And I was like,
give
oh.
you a little bit of anxiety.
Yeah.
A lot
one of those
of
things
anxiety.
Too, where I need to have one of my shortcuts to back up my shortcuts that I run before I do this stuff. But those things do take like an hour anyways. And we'll get to it, because I might set that up with the time of day automation to just go by itself. But in the process, I think it wiped out everything on my phone. It all did come back. Then it broke again and I had to do it again on my phone. And it took like 15 minutes for it to sync. It added all of like 700 shortcuts to the Apple Watch. So then I had to restart that one up multiple times to get it to clear. There is a way you can select all the stuff in the Apple Watch and just remove it from that category, which is very nice. It's not like one by one, which could have easily been the case again. But then as my phone syncs back the second time, well, first of all, I didn't realize till later my personal automations got wiped out, which is the point of this project, is I set some of those back up. But also in the process, it took about half of my shortcuts out of those folders. So I did time tracking afterwards, because it took me about 3.5 hours to put all of my shortcuts back into the folders. Thank God I color coordinate them, because that made it actually fairly easy. It was like sorting them and stuff like that was kind of a pain, but I could go by like big chunks of blue and I know where to put those. So that would have destroyed me if I hadn't have done that. But this is one of those reasons that you don't install betas or wait yes. until the later betas if you are going to do it. So that was fun.
That's
oh my
scary.
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, thankfully it's not too bad. I generally know the order of my shortcuts and just getting it. I had been doing a lot of projects, so I was like very aware of everything, but that all came back. The big thing that sucks is the NFC tags are now all unsynced. So I have to go, first of all, I think I have a list somewhere that's of all 25 of them or more. But I'm just going to be like, oh yeah, this one. Or I went to go use an NFC tag and it just didn't work. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. I also went to use normally, well, let me just start in with the automations that I am going to set back up. Some of them I haven't done yet, but then the other ones I will go through real quick. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay. So I will save time of day for the end because that is the new one where you can have your shortcuts just run in the background automatically. But I have a bunch of ideas for those and maybe we can come up with some more. But the alarm automations, which goes off when you have your, when your alarm goes off, I have my morning routine set right now, but I'm actually probably going to change that. And I don't really know if I'm going to use alarms much in going into the future because of the new sleep automation triggers, which there's new triggers for wind down, bedtime, and when you wake up. So it can essentially know that you're asleep. It's not technically aware whether or not you're asleep, but if you're in bed versus the wind down period ahead of it. But now I want to set up for one thing. One of the shortcuts I want to run is stop tracking my time, because that is a thing that if you use the service Toggle is pretty notorious, is you wake up in the morning and check your email and it says you've had a timer that's been running for 18 hours. And it's like every single time. So I'm assuming if I'm asleep, I'm not working. So I think that's a safe one. The other shortcut that I want to put in for my sleep routine is to, for when wind down starts, enter my evening routine tasks into things. So I made a video with Renee Ritchie earlier this year about how I use the app Data Jar to input my routines into things on a daily basis using shortcuts. And now I'm basically going to try to get it so I never actually even touch that shortcut and it just goes in at the right time of day based off of these types of things, which is cool. Let me see. Some of the bedtime and waking up stuff does rely on consent from your partner of what you want to happen. I don't want the bathroom lights to turn on when I, another thing too, we've talked about this, but I don't always exactly turn off wind down right away. Like I still haven't internalized, mostly because every single time I'm extremely tired, but I still haven't internalized how to get it to stop working early. I think I do have it, but it's still one of those, again, I'm always tired. So I'm like, wait, what did I just do? Or I've only recently found out how to actually add shortcuts to wind down. You have to go into the health app. I didn't even apparently haven't thought about it in the last 2 weeks, but you have to go in there and that's when you can set your shortcuts and it'll even give you specific recommendations from apps, which is really cool. Like stuff from iOS 13 is already showing up there, which is neat. So yeah, those are my sleep personal automations. I think I might have espresso machine turn on in the morning and that kind of thing, but that's noisy and I don't know if I want it running for 2 hours. Like I gotta maybe put an electricity meter on it before I do that, because I don't want it to just spend $10 a month having my espresso machine on for 2 hours in the morning. Sounds pretty stupid.
Yeah, that wouldn't be too great.
By the way, if you do have any in these same categories, feel free to jump in as well. But for the location section of automations, which is arrive, leave, before I commute, and CarPlay, these are like the most useless ones right now because I don't go anywhere. But in the before times, I had ones set up for arriving at the coffee shop that I used to go to start time tracking stuff, because I'm usually going there to work. So that was kind of the one that I use there. Again, not as relevant now. The leave one also, I guess a good thing I should note is that arrive and leave are still manual. So these will pop up, but you have to run them. So it's not like when I leave the house, all the lights turn off. That's a home automation that I do have. But this one is sort of, I want it to pop up when I leave to check my errands list and reminders, just to, I tend to forget that I need to get something, and it's like, oh, I was right by that store again before times. I don't leave the house anymore. And then the other one, even then I didn't totally leave the house that often since I work from home, but there's a before I commute, which can do before you're leaving for work or coming home from work. It can kind of, based on your normal patterns, send a notification up to, I think, an hour in advance. And then that one was, I wanted to check the BART times, because if you are traveling by BART or something, or your local transit company, it could kind of notify you, hey, just so you know, here's when the trains are, so you can catch them ahead of time. That one. And then CarPlay, this one actually I still use and is great. It just opens Overcast every single time I plug in my phone. And it actually tripped me up for a while, because I forgot I had this as an automation at all, because it just always did it. And I always wanted to listen to the podcast when I got in the car. But that was a good example of perfect automation where I didn't even remember that it was being automated, because it just did what I wanted. The two new personal automations that they just added this in iOS 14 are when you receive an email and when you receive messages. I haven't actually set some of these up, but I totally realized that I wanted this entire weekend, because we ordered parts from Home Depot, and I did see that there was going to be a delay, but I didn't expect it to be 2 full days. So they were like, oh, we'll email you when your order is ready and you can come pick it up. And I basically was waiting on an email this entire weekend and wanted to know when it came. And so this would have been a perfect one if I could have set it up, and then it would have just sent me a notification, because I don't have email notifications on. That's a terrible, terrible thing to do.
Don't ever do email notifications, because that's just asking for stress. By the way, this is so shaky because I'm using Camo Studio.
You got to set it up. Nice.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Let's see. I can switch.
Maybe that's just you.
Oh, God. That's so close to my face.
Super close.
Let's go back out, please. Okay. That's fun. I already like it. Here's Flash. Oh, no, because if I do ultra wide, then you'll see the clutter in my office, and that's just not acceptable.
That's exactly what I was going to say. And I put it on my camera stand, and it showed almost my entire ceiling. Like, if you ever watch the video on this, it's my shot goes right to my closet door, and it would show like 4 feet in front of my closet door on the ceiling. It's just pure white. It's like, I don't think I'm ever going to use the ultra wide stuff, but I'm going to get a stream going soon where I have as many devices and plugged in and just switch between multicam at all times or something like
here,
that.
I could do ultra wide like this.
Straight up your nose. Nice.
You only see my ceiling.
Wow.
This has virtually no lag, and it probably shows as lag on the Skype stream, but the video that I'm seeing from the app itself, there's no lag, which in every other app I've used has had lag. So this is, I'm impressed. I might actually have to use this because this camera clearly is better than my Logitech camera. Very cool. Yeah, and there are lots of, it's not showing any. Oh, I bet it's just the video coming back to me that's lagging probably.
No, it looks good to me. Yeah, it's like showing faster than my camera shows me talking. So
that's really, I'm impressed with this app. This is a very cool app. And I can do
I'll have to build you a shortcut that opens that app on your Mac and on the iPhone at the same time.
Oh, actually, mm-hmm. I think. I was going to say, over I could SSH. Do that with my Stream Deck, but then I realized no, because there's no way to make it do it on my iPhone. So yeah, you'd have to.
Well, you could do a shortcut. The phone could trigger the Stream Deck shortcut. Yeah, exactly. You could do that too. I was going to go a more complicated route. I forgot about that. Oh my God. I was recently trying to figure out the easiest way to launch apps, and I'm trying to get the Shortcutify developer to add it, but Stream Deck is also a good solution. Also, you totally interrupted me, and I was just about
to
say
sorry.
One that was related to you too. So,
oh, I'm sorry. I was too excited.
Your skin does look very, very nice through this. I will say,
yeah,
I'm sure it's naturally that color, but
It's not quite this color, so yeah, I'm very pleased with the tan that it has given me. All right, I'm going to switch back now to my normal camera because my arm's getting tired, but I'll definitely be... Oh, you can see. I will definitely be using that app for sure.
Your video,
okay. There we go. Nice. All right, go ahead, Matthew.
I was just going to say that the personal automation that I want to have is whenever Micah sends me a message, the light on my desk flashes purple. So that's a good...
What?
Those are fun.
How do I do that?
It's just when there's a message trigger now. So it's not like I think that the weird thing that people are saying is you can't find messages or get your emails. So you can have the trigger go off based off of it, but you can't use the email contents in your shortcut. So hopefully they add some more, like they've added more actions in betas in the past years. So there could be more features coming, which is cool. I will power through these last ones because I have a ton. But for Apple Watch workouts, I think I've mentioned this before. I have it, first of all, log the UV index outside because I don't know why. I'm a nerd and I think it's interesting to like know how the sun exposure, although again, not going outside as often.
I mean, that's a fantastic thing to have. Yeah,
I think I said it on Renee's video, and I was like, "Oh, that sounds nerdy." And of course, you're like, "Dr. Micah over here."
Yeah. Don't let me. I will go into too much. I think that's so incredibly important. You bless you, and good for you, and leave Mark Zuckerberg and his sunscreen alone.
Oh, that got me. Okay. The other one, and I think I totally blew this on another podcast that I was on of, this is my favorite automation, is when I start a walking workout and I'm wearing my AirPods, it turns on transparency. So basically as I walk out the door, if I'm have them in noise cancellation, I can hear the world and go outside. And then when the workout stops and I get back inside, it shuts it off. So I don't have to like hear the cars going by because we do live on a corner and it can be pretty noisy. But yeah, that one is, like today I went on my walk and noticed that it wasn't working because I was like, holy crud, like a car came flying by and I didn't hear it at all. And normally my automations handle the listening for me. So that is cool. That always feels so futuristic.
How do you make the lights flash instead of just turn off?
Oh, I don't know if I can do that. Maybe if this then that can do that for you, but HomeKit can't. You could turn it on, wait 1 second, and then turn it off again or something.
Oh, okay.
Six times and wait a second in between each. Get some scripting in there.
I'm going to have to try that.
The other new triggers are close app, battery level, and charger. And the close app one isn't even in there yet. It's not totally clear whether this means when you just like exit an app or if it is completely quit in the background. So maybe they hadn't figured that part out yet. But battery level is one that I need to use because I've been dying on the betas, quite literally with my phone and my watch being completely out of power. But it goes so fast that I'm not aware. And then it's suddenly in low power mode and then suddenly almost dead. And so it happens so much and so often that I kind of just ignore it and don't end up charging it. So I'm trying to have it set a reminder in 10 minutes in the future. Hey, charge your stupid phone, you dummy. and then the other one that I'm interested in messing around with is not necessarily just the trigger itself, but I want to have triggers change my watch face. So I was thinking of when I open like my app things, it changes to the face that I have that uses things. And then when I close it, it somehow goes back. I don't know how to get that part, but, and then the charger one, I wanted it to be like when my phone is on the charger, I want to use my watch more often. So it changes it to a more useful utility kind of face. So yeah, there's tons. Oh my gosh, I didn't even talk about the one that I was saying is the most exciting, the time of day stuff. I will just read out my ideas because some of these I haven't built, but I kind of went through a series of what are things you would do on a regular schedule, but you don't want to, like, it is so beyond how you even use your phone that I feel like most people are going to struggle to come up with any sort of idea of what happens if a shortcut just runs in the background. And it's almost like a very computer programmer type thing. But I'm going to say I'm going to back up my shortcuts, maybe somehow have a daily review system where it like checks how many reminders did you check off and charts them with the app Charty and makes a sheet. I don't know. I was just thinking work. I used to have to do weekly review type things. I have one that adds the weather to the calendar. So you could have that run every Sunday and it could just have recent or even every night, it could just run tomorrow's weather. So it's always up to date. I have one weekly note that I tend to create every week that automatically generates based off of like Sunday to Saturday. It puts in the dates and says weekly note. And now that's actually on my notes widget on my iPhone home screen. So now this will just create itself every Sunday morning. I also have music playlists for the mixes. So get up mix, chill mix, all that stuff. Those are updated once a week on those specific days. And I had a story, I wrote this about workflow so long ago, but it is, I call them master mixes, which also, okay, maybe you can shed some light on, is that part of the terminology that I shouldn't be using anymore? Actually, in terms of being like a master of the arts, I was like, at least consider it. But these would take the chill mix of the week and add it to one every week so that eventually I have 1,000 chill songs that Apple Music thinks I like. And then I just don't want to do that manually. I tend to forget. Backing up iClouds, word of the day, clearing out your screenshots. I have those saved to files, clearing out old reminders that you finished. I want one to send me a notification every night of the reminders that I haven't done yet, because I tend to forget stuff and then it just gets overdue. I have one that saves the New York Times front page, so it could just save that every day for me automatically. Saving any notes that you've taken in the Notes app or day one. And then the other one was just sending you the weather report in the morning. So those are a ton of ideas that I just kind of was writing down. I think we should, I want to stream with you about health shortcuts and maybe my friend Joey Banks, because he's done one similar to you, but we should do ideas like this and come up with fun stuff because
yeah, I like it.
It's unlimited possibility. Like I just named off 25 of them and that was just scrolling through my library. So
can you text me?
What the?
Just text
ideas
me
or when?
No, right just now? Text me you want... right now. Yeah. Let's see if I set it up properly. All right. So Matthew's going to text me and I set up an automation that is meant to flash this light when he sends me a text message. So he has sent me the text message and now in theory, the automation would happen to this light, but it appears that there is at the very least
did you turn off the silliest
show run
toggle? Yeah. Don't show when run.
Oh, let
don't
me do
ask
that.
When running so that you cannot not give a confirmation that it's isn't not running. Sorry, everyone.
So I went into shortcuts and I went into and I tapped on automation and then I tapped add and I chose a personal automation and then it says when I get a message from Matthew and then it says message contains and I just left that blank so that way it's anything. And then I said do and it set some accessories. I don't see any option to turn off show when run.
Oh, no, I did not know. Are those not? Those might not be actually truly automatic. Oh, is that not the case? I feel like I have egg on my face. But
what does that mean?
I think these ones might be not. So like what I was saying of the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth ones only show up as notifications. They're not actual automations. And I think that's what's been the biggest criticism is that they automatically show up as notifications and then you can run them, but they won't just run in the background. So that does make sense. I can see maybe perhaps the issue in general, I think, has been security with Apple of they don't want, if anytime you get a text message from Micah, like if it, anytime you message me, it just kept flashing blue and you couldn't stop it and you're in the middle of something or something like that. I don't want to give them too much credit because I do think this stuff should be possible. So maybe this is a bug. It could just be these initial versions also, but I can try to get confirmation.
When I hit play, it did the yeah. thing.
That's just testing the automation though.
But I wonder
that's what would happen when you run the notification from the shortcut.
Yeah. Let me, hold on one sec. Let me lock my iPhone instead of having it sort of be open and I'm actively using it just to see if that makes any difference.
You want me to send you another one?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's not going to
work, but
it's probably not going to work, but we should definitely try it.
You're the best.
Such nice things he's saying.
Yeah. For no reason. Just spontaneous.
Dun, dun, yeah, dun, dun.
You probably got the notification, but that's the
no,
thing.
It didn't even show me a notification for playing the personal automation. It didn't say any. It only sent me your text.
You know
didn't
what?
Say anything else.
That sounds like a beta bug.
That
sounds
a
like
bug.
The first time it works and the second time it doesn't. That's exactly what happens in betas. It's like force quit, restart your device, and maybe it will work again.
Yeah, I'm gonna leave that enabled just so that I can be surprised one day when it does work. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot I set that up. Or I'll come back tonight and they'll be purple. Is there not a way to say, hey, now that I'm done with this automation, set the lights back to what they were? I guess you could get current state of lights at first, save that as a variable, and then at the end of the automation, say, set those lights back to.
I'm proud of you, Micah.
Thank you.
That's a good, I was like, oh no, yeah, you can't really, but you bested me there, so. I appreciate it.
See, this is why we got to do a stream. All right, let's move on to our picks of the week before these people start screaming. Thank you all for tuning in. Let's see. I have for you this week a cost-conscious choice for a HomeKit-enabled or HomeKit-secure video camera that will also work with the other platforms. So this is the Eve Cam. Well, it's not Elgato Eve anymore. It's Eve Home is the name of the company. And Eve Home makes a system, a suite, if you will, of HomeKit-enabled products that are good quality and are price conscious and offer some of the best, I think, integrations with the Alexa platform and the HomeKit platform so that you can sort of buy almost everything from one company. It's kind of nice. The Eve light switch, the in-wall switch is fantastic. The Eve devices for being able to check the temperature and humidity and those kinds of things in a given room. And then now this Eve Cam can add to your setup. And because of my own platform, my own setup, I use Apple's HomeKit, and this integrates really well with the HomeKit setup. So what that means is I get a private and secure camera access method, I guess is the best way to put it, that lets me control and view my home while I'm away, all via the Eve Cam. So if you have a storage subscription with Apple, then you can get loads and loads of, in fact, here I'll read it out to you. HomeKit Secure Video requires a supported iCloud storage plan. You can add one camera to your 200 gigabyte plan or up to 5 cameras to your 2 terabyte plan at no additional cost. And then camera recordings that are saved don't count against those storage limits. So even though Apple will be storing those for you, it's not going to count against your storage limit as long as you have one of those storage plans. And this lets you recognize when there's a pet in the room, when there's a person in the room, when there's a human in the room, and you can get notifications for this information throughout the day. And coming in iOS 14 in a feature that I've been testing is one that uses your photo library to actually do person detection. So it will look at the faces that you have given it in your photo library, your Apple photo library, and then say, hey, I think this person has, you know, shown up in the camera, which later on down the line, Matthew and I are excited that there are implications there for automation. So you can imagine when this person specifically walks into my house, play Darth Vader, Imperial March. And when this person walks into my house, play Baby Shark to annoy the crap out of them and make them leave. You shouldn't have a bunch of people walking into your house anyway, but you get the point. I think that it's super exciting. And the Eve camera, I will say this. It's $149.95, so $150. And the one thing, it's very clearly an indoor camera. That's just something that's worth noting. If you are expecting a camera that is, you know, ready to be stuck up outside and is going to be waterproof and stuff like that, this is not the camera for you. Eve makes it very clear that it's an indoor camera. But it's made of plastic. It does have a magnet, which is nice. I can stick it on things, but it is not quite what I expected in terms of build quality. The other Eve products, and in fact, let me grab one. Are surrounded in aluminum. This is the Eve button, I think it's called, if I remember correctly. And it's got aluminum surrounding it. The rest of it is plastic, but it has this nice aluminum outer covering. And so when I got this, I guess I was a little disappointed that it felt a little, it just isn't very rugged and isn't very sort of hefty. And that's nice in the sense that it can go anywhere and you don't have to worry about, you know, putting an anchor into your drywall or anything like that to keep it held up. But I guess I just expected it to feel a lot more robust is the best way to put it. So yeah, that's the Eve Cam. Again, if you're looking for a cost conscious option and you want one indoors that is built from the ground up to be a HomeKit secure video offering, then this Eve Cam is great. And particularly if you've already used Eve Home products in the past, it's just one more to add to the integration to your setup. And that way it's good. What have you got for us, Matthew?
I will, real quick, by the way, I do have other Eve products and I do like a lot of their stuff. I'm definitely interested in this, although I do wish it was an outdoor camera because that is the one that I'm looking for right now. And also to note, it is HomeKit only. So if you are in the Amazon ecosystem, it will not work. Give me a moment. My stuff crashed. Okay. Sorry.
No, I misunderstood that then. Because I thought that this worked with others as well. But yeah, I guess it is.
Yeah, I think Eve is all only HomeKit.
Utterly and entirely Eve, yeah.
Which is HomeKit. Most of the time hasn't been a problem for me, except that now since I still haven't gotten my LifeX stripped back on HomeKit, so I use my Echo to turn off my office, and then everything except for my one Eve light in there turns off. So it is worth noting because otherwise you're out of luck. Yes, my pick of the week is a Google app inside a Google app, it will now let you translate Egyptian hieroglyphs. So this is obviously what? Very useful in my day-to-day work as an Egyptologist. I don't know. But it's a feature called Fabricius, which lets... The short little video they have is people who have been translating hieroglyphs have been using the same method for years and years and years, and it's completely ineffective. It's just like comparing the symbols and looking and writing it down. So They have a whole app now where you can, much like, I mean, a lot of Google Translate, I think, can even read signs in other languages and project it on the sign so it looks like it's in that other language. And so they're building a tool to use machine learning so that eventually, as you're scanning the hieroglyphics, it can kind of figure out and fix it all for you. So you can basically learn how to, like, you can scan the area and then increase the grayscale in the background to make sure you have just the right stuff, and then match it to what other symbol library and things like that, and then eventually maybe write in hieroglyphs, which is pretty neat. So yeah, neat tool from Google.
Yeah, that's very cool.
It's like one of those things that I was being tongue-in-cheek of. Most people aren't going to actually find any use from this, but this is a great example of the tech where you could, especially, I was just imagining, it would be pretty impressive to go to Egypt and have this app and read the hieroglyphs on the wall, because that just makes it so much more literal than, oh, here's what these say, or I don't know, some sort of guide around it is actually translating it in front of you is pretty neat.
Yeah, awesome. All right, folks. Well, I've got to play around with this new app that Matthew, by golly, had to show me. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how I can add this to my setup here. Thank you all for tuning in. If you want to send in your questions, your thoughts, your feedback, etc., those go to stt@twit.tv. We, of course, record the show live every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, 2300 UTC. But if you don't want to watch the show live, if you just want to get it in your podcast app of choice when it's available, you just head to twit.tv/stt, and that's the link that'll let you subscribe to the show in all of its formats, be it audio, video. We do encourage video just because we've got lots of visual gags going on, but you can get it in audio as well, whether you're watching it on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, etc. And if folks want to follow you online, Matthew, and check out your awesome work, where do they go to do that?
My most recent video is actually on Rene Ritchie's channel. One day I might actually make YouTube videos for my own channel, but I have a post up on my website linking to that where we talk through iOS 14 shortcuts. So that's a pretty fun introductory thing, and I'm working on a very in-depth, excessive, I have 24 pages of home screen widgets video sometime soon.
Well, we, I know, are all looking forward to seeing that when it is available. And if you want to follow me online, I'm at Micah Sargent at pretty much all of the social media platforms, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee. That's chihuahua.coffee. I've got links to all the different ways to follow me online. All right, folks, it is time to say goodnight to your smart assistants.
Good night and good luck.
Oh, good night, Alexa. I'm not going to say it.
I'm Jason Howell, host of Tech News Weekly here on twit.tv, along with my co-host, Micah Sargent. Each and every week, we talk to people who are making and breaking the tech news. It could be journalists writing amazing tech stories. It could be experts. It could be the sources of the stories themselves, developers, you name it. We bring them onto the show and we talk to them about why their story is resonating with the world. You can watch and subscribe by going to twit.tv/TNW. Make sure you do that and you won't miss a single episode. We'll see you there.